across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, the sunny shore of Lake Wissota. I can say it this morning where it's a beautiful day up north on this Thursday, July 6th, 55 degrees up here on the lake, 64 in Waukesha, where folks are listening to us on the Shaw on the Civic Media Radio Network. La Crosse coming in at 60, Wisconsin Rapids, 55 degrees. Hayward, listeners to Buzz of the North, you've got 46 degrees right now, and Eagle River is at 45. Here's what's on tap this morning on this Thursday. You have to give it up to Governor Tony Evers for his creative use of the partial veto in making sure, for example, when he signed the state budget bill yesterday, that Wisconsin public schools receive a certain level of support for the next 402 years. That's just the way the veto works with the Wisconsin budget. Joe will have some of the details and then we'll explain further. Also, Scott Ross will join us in our next hour. He'll have some serious things to say about student loan debt and the setback by right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. But he joins us near the end of this first hour to help discuss the greatest subgenre of the rock and roll era. And of course, I'm talking about yacht rock. Then in our second hour, along with Scott talking about student loan debt, we have our hometown health segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and she will be joined by a postpartum doula who reviews the benefits of extending women's post-pregnancy health care through Medicaid and the latest setback by right-wing politicians in the Wisconsin legislature to not allow women to have longer postpartum care at a very vulnerable time in their lives. On these topics or any others that you care to bring up, our studio line is 844-967-2789. Our email address is radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And you can read what we do at Up North News at upnorthnewswi.com. And you can subscribe to this show as a podcast by going to the Civic Media webpage, civicmedia.us. Now, and we do this live radio show as a live video feed as well on a few different Facebook pages, Twitter, YouTube. And so if you're watching on one of the Facebook pages, we'd love to have you leave a comment there, and we may put that up on the screen as well. Aaron Zommers joins us now from Madison, where he's holding down the Civic Media Fort. In the meantime, where Aaron, while I'm very thankful for the surprise birthday party that you and the others were able to spring on me last night near the end of the show, I can't tell you how many times I have vacuumed this rug and other parts of the house to get rid of the glitter confetti that was a part of yesterday's surprise party.
Yeah, at least it was confetti more so than glitter, because otherwise you would never get that out.
No, you never would. How did my wife, who is an OBGYN, described glitter as the herpes of the craft world?
Yep, you know, craft herpes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the confetti had enough tiny pieces. And what have I been talking about for a couple of weeks here? Getting new carpeting in the house. And so it's kind of a deeper pile, of course, you know, fresh new carpeting. So you go over it with the vacuum a couple of times. You see that you got it all. But then you just look at it from another angle and you see some more that hasn't been sucked up yet. And of course, in my initial walking out of the office, I dragged some along on the bottom of my feet. And so, yeah, it's kind of like it's Easter grass is really what it is.
Maybe we should have planned this out earlier so that she could delay your carpet until we did this party.
You know, why would I miss out on that? Especially the opportunity. And nobody counted on me saying, hey, guess what? I got a little desk fan here. Right. Let's see what happens when you drop confetti in front of this desk fan. And if anybody's looked on the video clip that we've posted on social media, I'm kind of surprised I didn't choke to death on it.
But oh, yeah.
Anyway,
me too.
We got through it. And again, I was very thankful. It's not every day that you reach into your desk drawer and see, you know, confetti and a Bloody Mary in a drink mug, which I had to ask later on. And Sherry told me that she, you know, kept it. I said, was that like a real Bloody Mary? Was that a virgin? And she's like, it was extremely weak. I had to technically be able to say it was a Bloody Mary, but not to the point where it was going to inhibit you for the rest of the day.
Which is thoughtful.
It was very thoughtful of her. I know. Then after that, you know, along with the, you know, cleaning up the birthday party remnants and trying to do my regular day job for Up North News, I also had family here, younger daughter and their kids, 4 and 1, and they were packing up, getting set to leave. And it's, you know, it's always just so different when the house has gone from chaos, you know, one moment to just so quiet after that. You know, we have these little bunnies that come up to the garden or to the flower garden right outside the window here. Honestly, they're like some of our most regular listeners. These little bunnies that come up, of course, they split when there's a 4-year-old boy running around, you know, like a holy terror all over the place. So things are kind of getting back to normal again. We could leave the windows open because it's not so hot and humid like it was over the weekend. And, you know, it's just, what do I always say? It's a beautiful day up north. It's just gorgeous up here.
Yeah, it seems like it always is.
Yeah, well, we know better. It's not. But between the winter and the heat and the humidity and everything, when you get these moments, it's just awesome and nice to be a part of it so early in the morning, especially with folks willing to get up and join us. And we just want you to know we appreciate it so much. When we come back from the break, we're going to update another close Brewers game with the Cubs last night, and then they'll wrap up the series this afternoon. We will talk about what's new in the Up North News daily newsletter, and we will talk about the hot new thing in social media. It kept me up late last night. We'll see if it's going to do the same with you as well. We'll pull some threads coming up next. You're up north. We're going to be talking later in our daily history lesson and music break about Marty Balin there and forming Jefferson Airplane, later Jefferson Starship. And as we talk about Yacht Rock with Scott Ross later this hour, that song right there, Hearts by Marty Balin, Yacht or Nyacht? You think about that for a few minutes and we'll talk more about that. The Up North News daily newsletter comes out around 5 a.m. And this morning's edition included something brought up by Christina Laurie recently. And that is an article about 8 Wisconsin authors to add to your summer reading list. And no, I don't want to hear everybody say, oh, summer's over soon. We still have all of the rest of July and all of August. Plenty of summer left out there. And so go check out our newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Cubs and Brewers game 3 of their series last night. And for the second time this season, we have watched the once unstoppable Devin Williams give up some key hits in a save situation. This time, a 3-run ninth inning, thanks to some well-placed bloops off the Cubs' bats, as Chicago rallied to beat the Brewers last night 4-3. Willie Adames did hit homer number 13. Freddie Peralta will get the start in game 4 this afternoon, as the Brewers try to split that series with the Cubs. Then the Reds come to town. Cincinnati will be here starting tomorrow night for 3 games. And then we are into the All-Star break. And you can catch the Brewers in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support and in Richland Center on News from the Center. So tune into our Civic Media radio stations there. Well, some of us had been expecting that today was going to be a busy day, as Meta, the parent company of Facebook, released its own version of Twitter. It was to be called Threads, and all the buzz was that it was going to be released on Thursday. And folks were looking forward to that, not because, you know, they think Mark Zuckerberg is some kind of a role model, you know, witness what happened with Facebook in the 2016 presidential campaign, but given what Elon Musk has done to Twitter since buying it and basically setting $44 billion on fire and burning that platform to the ground, it increasingly looks like. Well, folks were looking for some kind of alternative. People have looked at something called Post News, which is very clean and well moderated, but it's not very well populated yet. There's Mastodon, which is rather unwieldy. And again, it's not easy to put together a list the way that Twitter used to have this ease. Twitter used to be essentially the Associated Press teletype, you know, in a newsroom. It was just a constant stream of news and information if you set up your feed that way. If you set up your feed with a bunch of, you know, idiots and losers, well, yeah, you're going to get stuff like that. But if you set it up for good news and information, that's what you would get. But ever since Musk took over, the site was increasingly less moderated and allowing more cranks and crackpots to come through. And just yesterday, I was noting that for some reason, I know that on the 4th of July, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who's in Europe right now, just decided to respond on Twitter to a bunch of randos about this and that and spewing the usual right-wing talking points. But the fact that Twitter was defaulting that, like, the first four things in my feed were Robin Voss tweets and then a few other, you know, right-wing tweets that came up. And I just thought, what is... I already knew things were going badly for Twitter, but I couldn't wait for Threads to come out, which I was expecting for today. So you can imagine my surprise when last evening, late afternoon, early evening, I get this notification on my phone that, you know, Threads is ready and is ready to be downloaded. And so while watching the Brewers-Cubs game, I got that set up. And as I'm looking at some of the other reports, it appears something like a million people an hour were signing up for this alternative to Twitter. And I have to say, so far, so good. It is a, I guess what you'd call, Aaron, a fairly basic, you know, looking Twitter platform. But I mean, you're not like a prolific tweeter or anything like that, but you're familiar.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say a lot of the functionality that's on there is something they could build over time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. People were already putting, you know, notes out, hey, add this feature or add that feature. But here's the thing that you noticed right away on this brand new platform. People were positive. They were pleasant. They were welcoming. Their tagline right now, if they were to start commercials, could be Threads. Less meanness, fewer Nazis.
And as long as they moderate it, it should stay at least mostly that way.
Here's hoping they do, because that, you know, again, it doesn't take much to completely ruin something. You know, when you, let's say you're at a party and one jerk comes in and, you know, starts trash talking people. And if the host doesn't throw them out, other people want to leave the party, right? I mean, that's just how it works. I actually thought about this yesterday. Here's a weird little tangent, but I was watching the Brewer game. And anybody, you know, who's familiar with Brewers TV broadcasts is familiar with a woman called Front Row Amy. Front Row Amy sits in the front row of Brewers games. And, you know, she's an attractive woman. She has done some modeling. She had, a rather active Twitter account for a while, all about her love of baseball. And then you noticed a lot less of activity from her. Because you also noticed, you know, the jerks came out of the woodwork, you know, to make crude comments about her and everything else. And so, you know, it really stands to reason that with any platform, it just takes a little moderation, like the host at a party. And if you don't do that, if you just say, well, I'm just a platform, I can't control what's on here. I mean, don't be surprised if you turn out like Twitter, where you're all that one year. And, you know, a year later, people are fleeing you in droves, you know.
Yeah, everyone's just looking for excuses, finding some platform that has the support. And if Meta is behind it, if Facebook's behind it, it's going to have support.
That's just it. See, it will. And I think most of us have the right attitude about it, that, look, again, Facebook is far from perfect. Mark Zuckerberg, far from perfect. But he's also very smart. He is a business person. He has figured out things that Elon Musk, for some reason, it escapes him, unless, of course, he's got different motives altogether, and I can't know that. So again, I'm not here to tell you Threads is going to be all that, just that it's the new thing right now, you know, in an era of new things. I mean, I've barely figured out TikTok, Aaron. I don't know if I can keep up with all you kids and your new apps.
I don't have TikTok, so you're ahead of me on that front.
The nice thing is, as I'm looking at the notifications, it seems like every few minutes, you know, somebody else comes in. And that's the thing, unlike Post and Mastodon, where you're building from scratch. And so you have to look up like everybody that you were following on Twitter and then look and see if they're on one of these other things. Because this one comes out from Meta, which already, you know, they're basing it basically off of Instagram. So you right away start with the default of everybody that you were following on Instagram. As soon as they create a Threads account, you're connected with them. And so I've just been watching my phone, and every few minutes up pops another, you know, so-and-so is now on Threads and following you. So-and-so is now on Threads and following you. And so you've already taken away the biggest part of the labor that was getting in the way of some of these other sites, which, again, the more, as I'm saying all this out loud, it gets us back to the point of, you know, there are plenty of people out there who live their lives without any social media at all, and they get through their life just fine. I don't know that I could necessarily be one of those folks. You know, some people have quit Twitter and Facebook, you know, entirely. And not just because I'm in the news business, but I just don't know personally that I could pull that one off.
Yeah, I think I've been able to stay mostly out of social media. Like, I just got Twitter this year, for example, and I only got it I mostly got it for work, but I have used Reddit for a long time. That's been my social media of choice just because the forum style has been really useful for finding information.
I hear something recently that the owner of Reddit is kind of doing something to people that users don't like there?
Yeah, so they recently made changes to their software so that if you are a developer making a third-party app for Reddit or some kind of accessibility program, such as a different app that gives more resources to people who are blind so they can still use Reddit. Now you have to pay just millions and millions of dollars to be able to develop things for Reddit. And so people are revolting because they're like, you know, this is important stuff for people to have, especially if you're not going to give the tools to people who use the official app. So moderation tools by default are terrible. So it makes it hard to keep Nazis out unless you use third-party mm-hmm. apps. And accessibility is terrible. And now they're charging a lot for it.
And look, nobody here is taking, you know, the true socialist viewpoint that, oh, you created this, now it must be free for everybody. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there are right ways and wrong ways to have a business model. And as much as I would like Twitter and Facebook to go back to what they originally were, they were chronological posts of what your friends were putting up. But if you're going to monetize something like this, you're going to have to find a way to either put in advertising, or now they put in algorithms to put things in front of you that they think that you would want to see. And again, I get that, but you're also going to reach a point where, you know, if you abuse that ability to monetize your product, you're going to drive people away. And that's the beauty of the free enterprise system. You're supposed to have that kind of competition. I've long said, where is the true competitor to Facebook? You know, and now instead it's Facebook that's creating the true competitor to Twitter. And that's, you know, I guess good for them that they're able to do that. But, you know, you need more competition out there. You need an alternative to Facebook too. Otherwise, they're just going to keep selling your data and everything else. And, you know.
Yeah. Same thing with Reddit. There's really not an alternative. And if you want to find answers to really specific questions of any topic, Reddit's often the best place. But I have joined a lot of users in just starting to delete all my posts, but they don't let you do it all at once. So I'm one by one deleting things whenever I have time.
I'm on it very rarely, and only for the past, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years. And as a result, the one thing I am good about is I delete my history, my local history, whatever you call it. That's always the last thing I do before I get out of it. I'm just like, I don't know where this all is going, you know?
So yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. One quick news story to tell you about, only because, I mean, you hear us all the time talking with Dr. Lyerly, who's an OBGYN. My wife's an OBGYN. Apparently, you don't have to be an OBGYN. Headline from Channel 18 in Eau Claire: bus driver helps deliver baby at Eau Claire bus shelter. It was Eau Claire Transit bus driver Jerry Melsness who had started his Friday started off somewhat regularly. He'd only been doing the job for 7.5 months. But at one point at the bus transfer center downtown, a woman 8 months pregnant, so she wasn't expecting this to happen, but the contractions came and they came hard, and then out came the baby delivered by an Eau Claire Transit driver. It's not something I would recommend, you know, but it's nice of Dr. Lyerly and Dr. Kreitler to share some of their work now and then with the rest of us.
Good job to that guy.
Very good job to that guy. All right, Joe Zepecki is going to kick off our discussion on the state budget that Governor Eber signed, and then more with Scott Ross after this. You're up north. And here now is Joe Zepecki to talk a bit about what's in the final version of the state budget that will be a spending blueprint for the state of Wisconsin for the next couple of years. Like any budget, it's complex, things to like, not to like, but some of the things not to like made it a little colorful around here these past few days. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I hope everybody had a nice 4th of July, got some time to relax and spend time with loved ones.
Man, we sure did. Hope you did too. I started my work week out for right away, right out of the box on Wednesday, hearing that the governor had signed the budget. I have to admit, I thought it would take a little bit more time for, attorneys to look over the language, but this is not his first rodeo, nor his second. It's his third state budget now. He knew where the partial vetoes had to go to do the best that he could with it. But before we get to the partial vetoes, we have to take care of this one more time. Because since you and I spoke last, a coalition of 15 different groups put out a letter, late last week imploring the governor to veto this, to take a stand and, force the issue. And I know what you said last week, what you said, that, what the governor does is what he's going to think is right. But did anything change in that preceding time between those 15 groups and legislators and everybody else? Did you ever at any point think Evers seriously considered vetoing the whole thing and forcing the issue?
I am sure that he heard what those groups had to say. This is a governor who, is always willing to listen. And I would be surprised if, strapped to a lie detector machine, the governor could truthfully say that he was really ever going to outright veto the entire budget. And the reason for that is pretty straightforward, which is the level of vindictiveness and sometimes pettiness that we have seen from elements within the Republican members of the legislature make it a pretty good chance that had he sent it back, the second go around would have been worse. And so the governor made the calculated decision to sign with 51 line item vetoes, what I would call a budget of hits and misses. There are real wins in here for municipalities with shared revenue, for K-12 public schools, including a very creative line item veto that is going to ensure that for the next 400 years,
402.
You can't mess with this additional $325 per pupil. So there are wins, dollars that will go towards clean drinking water and PFAS remediation and prevention. Those are the hits. Now, there are also, it has to be said, there are misses. There are missed opportunities, aside from the things that, Democrats and progressives just fundamentally disagree with Republicans on. There are some, what I mean there is some of the increase in the amount of the vouchers for these unaccountable voucher schools statewide. That's just, Democrats and Republicans are always going to disagree on that. I think what's frustrating and why I would describe so many misses in this budget is they're just missed opportunities to do right by the taxpayer. Choosing to expand Medicaid, finally, after 40 states have done so, would have meant another $1.6 billion in savings for the state over the next 2 years, not to mention 90,000 more Wisconsinites with access to healthcare. When you look at broadband, when you look at child care providers, there were opportunities to really use the surplus and put it to work. A new engineering building on the UW campus. All of those should not be controversial. They're not highly polarized or partisan issues. And yet Republicans in the legislature missed the opportunity to act on them. Therefore, you get a budget with some hits and some misses.
And I really can't emphasize that enough in terms of the missed opportunities that you set aside your basic partisan differences, but the things that the Republicans chose to do that actually exacerbate the labor shortage, and that directly hurt, you know, the job creation pipeline into Wisconsin. I know I've called them head scratchers for a couple of weeks now, but I'll be darned if I have any explanation yet as to why would they miss opportunities like that with this kind of a surplus. I get that they didn't want to stand, you know, toe to toe with Governor Evers and, you know, shoulder to shoulder and hold up their arms in a victory formation. For some reason, they're too petty for that. But some of these other things, I have to admit, they still defy easy explanation.
Well, I you're right that it defies simple explanation. Yeah. I do think one thing to watch for all of your listeners in the coming weeks and months is, by virtue of what the governor did with his veto pen, by taking out the tax break for those at the very top and ensuring that those Wisconsinites who pay the bring home the least every year will pay the lowest, will pay lower tax rates. What that does is it sort of means there's still a surplus, and a pretty sizable one at that. And so we heard a couple of different times through this budget process, Republican legislators saying things like, we'll get to that in the fall. Well, we'll look at that in the fall. Given that there is still going to be a balance and a sizable surplus, there is going to be more room for negotiation in the fall around things, hopefully, like childcare, like maybe some additional tax relief for middle-class families, as opposed to so disproportionately skewed to those at the very, very top, you know, the 11 billionaires from Wisconsin. And that's what Governor Evers was objecting to with his line item veto pen. So this provides space for negotiation. If we have learned anything in the last couple of months, it's that these two sides can sit down and can negotiate. That's what we saw on shared revenue. It's what we saw on funding for K-12 schools. So color me imbued with optimism anew in the wake of the 4th of July holiday. But maybe we can get some deals done in the fall.
Oh, optimism should last, you know, beyond the extent of this conversation would be a wonderful thing. And I wish I could share it. But again, just look at that income tax plan that they had, the cuts at the very top, which, again, they know how a line item veto works. So they knew that that would be the easiest thing to whack. And yet they went for it anyway, because it was a political talking point. At what point, if ever, because we haven't seen it in 12 years now, but at what point did they decide that when you have the majority, you can govern rather than play politics and rule? It's a lesson that eludes them to this day, it seems.
I'm not sure how you get a zebra to change its stripes, but once I figure it out, you'll be the first one to know, Pat.
That's right. I just want to touch again on and I don't have the exact details on it, but the complexity of a line item veto and the governor able to preserve a per pupil adjustment for the next 402 years. I don't know that Tommy Thompson and Tony Evers agree on a lot of things, but I'm sure Tommy Thompson is hearing about that veto and is going to raise a glass tonight as a toast. We don't have a Vanna White veto anymore, and yet Governor Evers could still do that.
Yeah, game recognizes game, I think. And the way they were able to do that was they tried to write in, you know, an additional $325 per pupil for 2023 through the 2024-25 school year, and they were able to strike enough letters to make the year appear to be 24-25. And you know, that's, you got to be innovative, you got to be creative, and clearly the governor and his team are.
Yes, yeah, that's so true. And let's again, to be we've talked a lot about what Republicans, you know, didn't do and what they did that was probably against, you know, the majority view out there, but the governor actually, you know, bragged up some of what the Republicans sent him in terms of not just the increase in support to schools and communities, the PFAS contamination, but things like we've spoken very little in this segment about the increase in workforce housing, and then the pay raise for state employees. So, you know, again, I don't want to be accused of just dwelling on the negative. There are things in this, like any budget, that do show some progress for the next couple of years.
No question. You know, correctional officers getting a raise. We've heard time and time again that that was a crisis or approaching a crisis. For public defenders, which are a crucial component of our criminal justice system. So again, there were a lot of hits and there were some misses. What I think we need to recognize is how fortunate we are to have a governor like Tony Evers, who is willing to sit down and negotiate with folks, even though he doesn't agree with them, and get as close to a good deal as he can. And that's what he appears to have done in this budget. I'm sure he's disappointed. You can sort of sense that in some of the rhetoric he's using, sort of saying that the Republican budget is incomplete and that he wants to try again. And, if you know one thing about Tony Evers, is that he's going to come back and continue to lean in and try to get things done, especially when it comes to our kids in the future. So I think childcare is certainly going to be at the top of that list going forward.
There are things he'd love to have covered in a fall session. There is a fall legislative floor period scheduled, but I do worry, to wrap things up here, that the legislature will do what they did throughout his first term, is they'll meet and pass a budget, but there will be so little done between the passing of the budget and the next election. And I get the governor saying the right things, but again, color me surprised if we actually have a very productive fall session, much less anything, in 2024, where, in those even number years, they seem to like taking, 9 months off at a stretch.
Well, that's the choice they're going to have to make. They can run on, getting something done and listening to the voters, or they can try to run again as the party that doesn't believe that women should make their own healthcare decisions. Because that's the reality of our politics right now, is that that issue remains a live wire, and absent some other, dynamic altering event, that's what this is going to come down to. It hasn't gone well for them in the last two election cycles, the spring of this year and the fall of last year. I don't think it's going to go very well for them next year either, unless they can figure out a way to change the conversation. In my recommendation, not that I'm here to provide my Republican friends with advice, but if they want to move past that issue, maybe come to the bargaining table and listen to the voters of the state of Wisconsin.
Let's see if they listen to us. We're trying, man. We're trying to help them. Joe Zepecki, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
If you missed the explanation, I want to go over it again, just because it's just one of those things that is unique to Wisconsin, the partial veto. And how is it that Governor Evers created a certain base level of school funding for the next 402 years? It was that the budget bill created an increase of $325 per pupil in the revenue limits each year, starting in 2023-24, but it also included, 2024-25. And by, crossing out a few things here and there, you could instead mean that $325 per pupil increase is going to last until the year 2425. Now, 400 years from now, given inflation, that's not going to mean as much. And again, it's also something that can be struck down in some future budget. But you wouldn't have these games at all if Republicans didn't insist that everything has to be adversarial. I mean, the most common sense thing that any of us can talk about in our neighborhood gatherings with people who may or may not always agree with us is that if you have a $7 billion surplus to work with, there's more than enough room for win-wins. So sit there and say, okay, how does this work for you? How does and what your priorities are? How does it work for our priorities and our values? And you come out and say, thanks to this once in a generation surplus for all kinds of factors, and we don't even have to agree on why there's a surplus. There just is. But instead of that, Republicans continued to say, well, it's not really a surplus. It's an illusion. Okay, but yet you took half of it and you gave it in middle-class tax cuts, and your definition of middle-class in their bill, middle-class was household income of $34,000 to $374,000. That's a big middle class. That's a whole lot of folks making over $250,000 a year who are paying the same tax rate as somebody making $34,000 a year. That's not right. And so you'll have Republicans who have been saying, they've been saying all night long that, Governor Evers got rid of tax relief. Well, That's as phony as claiming that you were giving a 15% average tax cut when you were actually giving 16-17% to multimillionaires and single-digit tax cuts to people in the actual middle class. So we'll have much more to say about this over the coming days. We're still going to look at some of the Republican talking points on the budget as we look back at how they voted, what they said, why they did it, and what it really means to Wisconsin families and small businesses. But we're going to have a little fun with Scott Ross next, a little history lesson, a little music break, a little yacht rock, because it's summertime. That's what you do. We'll be back here up north. This would be Jackie Wilson. Jackie Wilson released this song, Higher and Higher, Your Love Keeps Lifting Me, on this day in 1965. There was something else happening that day. On this day in 1965, Marty Balin began recruiting members for the band that would become Jefferson Airplane, and then Jefferson Starship, and then Starship. On this day in 1885, Louis Pasteur successfully tested his vaccine against rabies on a boy who was bitten by a rabid dog. If talk radio had been invented at that point, it would have been called fake news by some. Thankfully, that was not the case. All right, let's continue our history lesson and music break for the day with our friend Scott Ross, who I worked alongside a long time ago. Well, he worked. I was just kind of there as a hanger-on at One Wisconsin Now. And now he is a, how do we describe you? A bon vivant, a raconteur, just a man about town.
Yes, professional gentleman of leisure.
There you go, professional gentleman of leisure. How are you doing?
Good, good, Pat. How are you today?
Well, I'm okay. I honestly feel bad for you because of the posts that I've seen lately that indicate that your efforts to embrace a summer of bicycling have not been met kindly by Mother Nature.
Oh, well, yeah, no, it's been, I've had some really, really terrible luck. You know, it rains for 10 minutes, monsoon in Madison for 10 minutes, and I seem to be getting caught out on my bike every time that happens. So it's, you know.
And hopefully that, you know, when that does happen, that you stay safe. I am just reminded that once I was 14, I believe, and I was trying to ride home quickly in the rain. I was going down a hill on a street. And apparently did not appreciate physics until that age, that wet bicycle brakes don't always work very well. And so I had to lay it down. I had to just, you know, lay the bike down and go through the intersection. And it was a T intersection. Magically, that, you know, for whatever reason, didn't go underneath one of the speeding cars, but did land underneath a parked car on the other side. So I'm not one to bicycle in the rain anymore after that little incident of road rash. And I hope your rainy bicycling doesn't have any kind of a story like that.
Yeah, no, not so far. Thank goodness. Yeah, I haven't, it's been a while since I've bitten it. So, you know, I'm sure that'll happen today if I'm mm-hmm. out on my bicycle. So thanks, Pat.
Yeah.
Really, appreciate it.
Really glad to put that ball on the tee for you. We're going to get to Yacht Rock in a moment, but what is accepted as the very first disco song to top the charts this day in 1974. If I say it's by the Hughes Corporation, you will know that the
rock
song.
Rock the boat.
That's right. Play that.
No, I'm sorry. Sorry. Don't rock the boat.
Yeah. So I'd like to know. You're actually right. The title is Rock the Boat, even though the chorus is all about Don't Rock the Boat. 50 Cent born Curtis Jackson in Queens, New York this day in 1975, making him, what, 48 years old today? Kevin Hart is 34. And honestly, Scott, I did not know this. Maybe you probably did, but two baby boomers born the exact same day. They are both 77 years old today. One is Sylvester Stallone. Any chance you know the other? It's just very unlikely that they're both 77.
I'm a young Democrat. I don't know.
No, George W. Bush.
Ah, there you go.
George okay. W. Bush and Sylvester Stallone.
I see that upsets me because I should know that because I researched George W. Bush.
That's why
he was destroying the country for 13 years.
I put that.
I
always think
because I know his old man's birthday is like on the 12th of June because that's right near when mine is.
Oh, that's right.
Unlike George Bush's, which is near when yours is. Because
oh, thanks.
You know, and I think we can all agree, of course, that George H.W. Bush was a much worse president than George W. Bush.
Sure, we could go with that.
Well, you know, because I mean, again, you know, he lied us into a war in Iraq that's cost us $3 trillion and 4,500 American lives. But he did give Mrs. Obama that piece of candy the one time. So I guess we should forget about what a war criminal he was. Yeah, I'm bringing it with both guns. Sorry.
Yeah, happy birthday, W. On this day in 1979, the B-52s released their self-titled debut album with one of their signature songs. I mean, now it seems like no big deal, but that was one of those where, you know, again, everybody kind of tilted their head like the Cocker Spaniel. It's like, what am I hearing? And it kind of grew on you after a while. Rock Lobster from the B-52s on the stage. We already played Susudio.
Just one second. The best concert that I ever saw, the most fun I ever had at a concert, was Ziggy Marley opening for the B-52s in like 1989, 1990 at the Starlight Amphitheater in Pittsburgh.
Oh, very nice.
They were a fun concert.
Yeah. Oh, God. It had to have been. So Susudio, number one this day in 1985. And in 2019, Lil Nas X breaks the record for longest running hip hop song with 13 weeks at number one on this day in 2019. All right. If there's one thing that.
I'm sorry, Pat, yeah. If you don't mind, I don't want to. But I think that you sort of glossed over Susudio just, you know, incredibly quickly, considering Susudio is part of one of the funniest things that's ever been on television in its long and, you know, a scarless run. But back in the mid-80s, well, back in, you know, in 1985, Late Night with David Letterman was obsessed. You know, this is the old NBC show. He was obsessed with Susudio. And there, at one point in time, at the beginning of the show, he's sitting there, finally has Phil Collins on, like they're doing a thing ahead of time. And he's sitting there talking to him about how he comes up with song titles. And in the back, Larry Bud Melman is hammering together a birdcage. And all of a sudden, he hits his thumb and he goes, ow! Humana, humana! Uchima, guchima! Su, studio! And then Phil Collins, you know, lights up and starts writing down. So.
I miss that old show. I miss Larry Bud. All right. One of the things that we like to talk about occasionally is the greatest subgenre of music ever. And that was yacht rock. And I love that there is like a cottage industry that has sprung up, including a site that's called Yacht or Nyacht. And they've actually given a rating to hundreds of songs to determine if it's yacht rock or not yacht rock. If I throw this at you cold, what yacht rock song, what got the highest score? What got 100 points and is doubtless the ultimate yacht rock song?
Well, I guess it was Christopher Cross's Sailing.
Oh, it's right up there, but you got to give it to the Doobie Brothers. I think Aaron's got that for us. Where, right? I mean, isn't that that's the theme to all things yacht rock, right?
It's fair.
Now, there are some things that surprise me that they're on there, like, you know, Michael Jackson's Human Nature just barely gets a score high enough. And yet Jackson Browne's Somebody's Baby gets a 49.75, so falls just short of yacht rock. So that is the mystery of the genre, which is why I think we enjoy it so much. So let's talk about more on the other side, because I got 10 seconds till a break, and we were going to start with all serious stuff in the 7 o'clock hour. Oh, no. We're sticking with the music. Come on back after news, sports, check of weather, and we'll continue this with Scott Ross.